Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's give the Black Friday, Black Monday special into Black Thursday. keep it going here this week. It's 50% off on any of my newsletters. You go to VRTrader.com, that's VictorRobertTrader.com, and the promo code is 2022 half off, and that should be good here through the end of the year.
Mark, you have more than one trading letter, don't you?
We have a whole bunch of them, and I also wanted to mention, though I do these trading letters, I'm not a financial advisor, though I had been in the distant past, and I don't provide financial advice. And we have about six different newsletters covering precious metals, the metals resource letter, which is hot now with gold moving. We have from years ago, we still keep it, the cannabis newsletter. In fact, the big cannabis convention is now going on in Las Vegas this week. Yeah. And originally I was going to attend it, but I couldn't make it this year. At any event, we also have, you know, our blockchain letter, which is also hot now with Bitcoin and Ethereum and XRP, all these cryptos moving. And I'm really excited about our annual forecast model, which is the VR forecaster letter, which, you know, we create a little sketch at the beginning of the year where we think the markets are going to move based on cycles. And the last couple of years, it's actually, I've been doing it since 1987, but the last couple of years, it's really worked out in terms of general correlation of the pattern. So I can't wait until we construct the 2024 pattern, which we should have shortly, and give us some sense of where the cycles point next year.
So, Mark, what is going on with gold right now?
Well, you got me, you know, why it suddenly took off now. I mean, other than the fact that dollar started to fell off a few weeks ago and gold wasn't doing too much initially, and then it started to move up. So our model for the year said it should be an up year for gold. And I guess the only catalyst you can point to directly one market to market is the weakness in the U.S. dollar. But there have been other periods where the dollar is weak and gold's not moving up. So some are attributing it to banks, you know, central banks accumulating more gold, but that's been going on for a while, and Russia and China, and then the story about the BRICS nations creating a new currency, which would be backed by gold, that's been in the news in the last few months, so probably a combination of all of those, but, you know, I still, you know, rely on the old, you can call it conspiracy theory or not, but I don't think it is. I mean, we've got government intervention in the gold market for decades in terms of suppression of gold, and there have been court cases, and people that I know, I mentioned their names several times, the website GATA.org, G-A-T-A.org. They've been doing research for decades on the suppression of gold, so maybe the government is laying off and they're not, you know, playing around with the gold market as they do with stocks, with the plunge protection team and the equity stabilization fund, these other entities that have been created to allow the government to interfere with the market. So, you know, perhaps there's less of that going on now. But, you know, maybe the market's becoming more free with the gold market. And, you know, there's concern about currencies. There's concern about the wars that are going on. There's concern about ridiculously high debt, particularly here in the U.S. and Canada. And, you know, maybe the the button switch went off, and they decided this is the time we got to start owning gold. But, you know, it's way behind in price. You and I know that. I mean, it's been adjusted for inflation. Gold should be double or triple where it is right now, but it's been held back for a whole bunch of reasons for a long time. You know, as a general statement, you know, governments, particularly this government, doesn't like the idea of high gold prices because it makes the politicians look stupid. So, you know, I think we already recognize they're stupid anyway, so maybe gold can go up now.
Anything going on with uranium?
Well, it's been just moving higher, over $80. It's the highest in you know, a couple of decades, I believe, in terms of pricing, or at least a decade and a half. And it's been rising for a while. You know, this is nothing started, you know, about a year ago, you know, moving up. And we can't pinpoint the exact reason, you know, what's going on. We know there aren't 10 zillion new nuclear plants being built. So, you know, maybe it's being used in the new base force for interplanetary reasons, you know, or, you know, we know the military uses uranium, but they've been using that anyway in terms of powering ships. Is it a concern of for war reasons? Are we creating more atomic weapons? I mean, where is it all going? So we really don't know why it suddenly took off now. We know that we need it. We know we need more nuclear plants and so forth. But like I say, here in the U.S., the only new one is in Georgia. So, you know, it's sort of a well-kept secret why the demand is there suddenly. Who's really buying it and where is it being used? I can't tell you that. I mean, we could speculate. But obviously, governments are involved somewhere that are accumulating or needing uranium. I hope it's not the Iranians, considering, you know, who are concerned about their nuclear program. But it's been a long time in coming. There's been talk about uranium taking off now for the last 10 or 15 years, and it had some spurts, but it really couldn't get going, and now it did this past year. So it'd be real interesting to determine, you know, actually who is buying that uranium and why it specifically is going up and where it's being used. Other than that, we see the markets moving, so we, you know, we're trying to play it, you know, and there are a couple big names out there. The biggest name is Cameco, which is Canadian company, CCJ, and they're doing well.
Has lithium bottomed out?
Lithium has had some problems recently. It got overbought. The concern about EVs selling like hotcakes really, you know, hasn't unfolded. The charts are okay, but they've been going through a bit of a correction here. I would say yes, the charts are looking better, but we went through a period of indigestion here for a while. We got too exuberant about the demand for lithium for the EV market, and we found out that, well, those EVs are awfully expensive. You can't power them necessarily. You want to depend on gas. You need really a hybrid. You can't only use that. And also the cost of the vehicles. In fact, speaking of lithium and hybrid vehicles, Tesla, Elon Musk had a big presentation today. I think it was in Texas for the new truck that he's issuing. So I think it's around $60,000 as a base price for that, which is not inexpensive, but that certainly, you know, could be a big point of interest and demand for that company. But how much lithium is that going to, how much is it really needed for that vehicle, and is that going to really change the market? But what can I say? I mean, it's like saying, you know, do we need another form of energy and another material to advance civilization, and lithium is part and parcel to that. So over time, it will appreciate. There are also concerns about creating enough lithium. You know, we seem to be scouring the world for new sources of lithium because it's not something you just dig out in your backyard. And one of the newer areas for that, which sort of came as a surprise to me when I learned it a few months back, was the Salton Sea in Southern California, which was a dead piece of water for the longest time, and so much salt is in there, but they found out there was a technique to withdraw lithium from the Salton Sea versus, you know, digging mines and doing things in other locations. So there's a several operational units underway there now in terms of extracting lithium from the Salton Sea in Southern California, and there's some private companies involved. I can't find a specific public company to play for that, though I did hear Berkshire Hathaway had invested in some projects there, but that's an interesting solution for that lithium problem.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. What's happening with crude?
Well, you know, we're all waiting for OPEC. And they came out and said, well, we're going to restrict production, ahead. But that wasn't enough to help crude oil prices here the last couple of days. We're still holding in that mid-70s area barrel. But, you know, OPEC is looking to raise prices and cut back production. I think they're working in cahoots with Russia as well. You know, there's a whole point that if there's a political change here in the U.S., let's say Donald Trump or the Republicans or some surrogate gets back in and allows open free production of crude oil and opens pipelines and reverses the position of Biden and the Democrats here in the U.S., that could create a tremendous new supply, a renewed supply of crude oil, and that could depress prices. So that's months away. You know, we won't know that for another year. You know, in terms of another U.S. election, whether that's going to change or not. But that's one bearish factor for crude oil, even though we know big picture there's huge demand for it internationally and so forth. And, of course, you got OPEC and others looking to restrict production to raise prices. So, on a multi-year basis, I just think you have to be overall bullish on it. And you see a lot of consolidation right now going on. And we heard today, for example, I think it's Phillips Petroleum, some outside private investment group, took a huge position in it, and the stock jumped up 6-7 points today. And we know just recently Exxon went after Pioneer Oil and Gas to consolidate and accumulate that company. And I think it was Chevron went after Hess as an acquisition. So it's a consolidation going on in the industry. And obviously these big companies, you know, feel there's a future for oil. They wouldn't be acquiring major other companies. So I would have to, you know, feel, I don't want to base it on political outcomes and so forth. I think there's a basic demand for it, and it's going to increase over time. And, you know, we'll find out if politically anything changes to create shortages or remove shortages. So I know the emergency reserve here in the U.S. supposed to be there for, you know, critical times, has been depleted and is at very low levels and never was restored to where it was prior to, Trump's leaving. So, that could be a big demand for crude oil if they ever decide to replenish the emergency reserve fund or whatever you actually call it. But in any event, it's tradable. It's down now, but with the accumulation going on, I still like the shares. And many pay some nice dividends. So I'm still overall bullish on crude.
Anything happening with copper?
Copper's starting to move here a little bit. Maybe it's related to the weakness in the dollar. The copper chart took out the 150-day moving average, which is one of my little triggers. Freeport, which is a big company. It's actually based here in Arizona. Started to move a little bit. And it's positive. You know, you can argue that's because of stronger economics and demand, whether it's for EVs or for other industrial purposes. So, seems to be in a little uptrend here. So, you know, that sort of builds the case for a strong economy, because copper, of course, is a critical component not only for EVs, you know, construction and all other uses. So, that's a positive. It's starting to move here a little bit.
What's happening with cannabis?
Not much. I'm a little disappointed. I mean, you know, it's been in the cellar. It's been at a bear market now for a while. We had a bounce a few weeks back on the anticipation of the Banking Act being invoked, you know, which would help
cannabis companies, you know, use credit cards and banks, which have been restricted. And also there was the simultaneously discussion of cannabis itself being rescheduled from a Schedule 1 down to a Schedule 3. So you had a nice pop in some of the shares a few weeks ago. That sort of died off. The marijuana convention's going on right now in Vegas. Usually you get some type of rally around that convention. You're not getting much. So I think much of it is based on whether the Banking Act is passed in Congress and the rescheduling occurs from the DEA, and none of which have happened. There was a lot of chatter about it. It's been going on for, you know, a few years already, discussion about both these subjects, and, you know, that some political resistance, apparently, that it's not passing so quickly, both of them. Now, whether they pass all tomorrow doesn't mean that cannabis is going to be an explosive industry, but it can't hurt. So let's see what happens.
What's happening on the crypto front?
Crypto's still doing good. We had a little pullback here the last couple days. You know, it's a little extended. You know, it's had a nice move here. I mean, you know, Bitcoin up to $38,000 from where it was $15,000. But, you know, a lot of it is based on the anticipation of that ETF. We've talked about this numerous times, that Larry Fink and BlackRock are trying to get passed through the Securities and Exchange Commission, get ETF trading. We have GBTC already trading. So that's been sort of the impetus for the move here recently, that big fund is going to be created and create demand. So like anything else, these things trade and they swing all over the place. I think you got to have a position. It's like saying, should you own some gold? You know, or should you own some real estate, or should you own some treasury bills? You know, a little bit of everything to be diverse, and Bitcoin is one of those opportunities, because I think over time, particularly with a big player like that getting involved, over time, crypto and particularly Bitcoin is going to go much higher. I think it's going to go substantially higher. It doesn't mean it can't drop $5,000 or $10,000 a coin. We've seen this happen many times in the last few years, big volatility. But it's an allocation, and big players are getting involved. So look at the charts, you know, wait for a pullback if you can get one. You know, don't jump in all at one time. And I guess if you got to pick one, you know, you go for the Bitcoin because of the big players coming in with the funds that are going to be, you know, buying crypto as the public and other investors start to buy the ETF.
Anything going on the geocosmic front?
Well, yeah, I'd like to mention that as well, but I also want to mention very briefly that we had two big losses this past week. You know, two esteemed gentlemen who passed away, and I think some recognition needs to be given both of them. One, of course, is Charlie Munger, who was passed away just a few days short of 100 years old, is Warren Buffett's partner, who just, you know, we should all pray and hope that we make it to 100 and are billionaires at that stage of our lives. And he was, you know, a remarkable person. And there was also the passage just a couple of days ago of Henry Kissinger, also 100, who had done so much on the political front over the decades. And, you know, I just, two remarkable men that we need to mention and respect and honor. But as far as the solar place, there is actually something cooking right now, and if you go to spaceweather.com, they call it a powerful cannibal solar burst will hit the Earth tonight, and this was published about 9 hours ago here on Thursday. And CME is a coronal mass ejection from the sun. So they say there's something, you know, brewing here, and it could, you know, it's not going to blow up the Earth or necessarily knock out our high-tech stuff, but it could create some super auroras, and you can see stuff in the sky, supposedly. So it's enough that they made a headline about it. I never heard the term cannibal solar burst will hit this the Earth tonight. So by the time, I guess, this recording is broadcast, we'll find out if any effects it had. But it's an interesting story. You know, we think we're so unique here. We talk about the markets all the time, and we worry what Hamas is going to do, or what China is going to do, or what North Korea or Russia are going to do. And meanwhile, you got the sun out there, and we have geocosmic forces, and not to mention earthquakes and volcanoes and hurricanes and all the other things that can affect or even destroy our lives, and, you know, something crazy on the sun, as it did on the Carrington event back in the mid-1800s. I mean, something out of the blue, like talking about an asteroid or something. It seems like totally left field and crazy, but, you know, something like this happens, our lives change overnight. So interesting to watch it. We can't do anything about it, but certainly something to watch and, think about, and puts us in our place, so to speak, who we really are and where we stand in the scheme of things.
Yeah, little bugs on a speck of dust hurtling through the universe.
Right, right. And we're worrying what the Fed's going to do tomorrow with interest rates, right?
Thank you so much for chatting with us, Mark.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you so much for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.